Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. Citizen Cannon, Darren Beatty. We talk a little bit about Bob Menendez, and then we talk about Ray Epps, and then also Ron DeSantis. Pretty exciting episode. Cover a lot of topics. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. As always, get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
What you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Eye-opening, I got to be honest, of the emails we're receiving asking, do you think America is still a great nation? Of course, we believe we were once a great nation. Overwhelming amount of you say no, we are no longer great. Eye-opening to me. If curious, email me throughout the hour, freedom@charliekirk.com. Joining us now is Citizen Kane from citizenfreepress.com. Mr. Kane, thank you for taking the time. I think all eyes are on this funding fight. You guys at CFP Nation have been covering this. What are you hearing, Kane, front lines, grassroots, as far as what are the expectations and demands going into the 9:30 funding fight?
Well, expectations probably match up with the emails and responses you just got that you just mentioned, which is everyone is incredibly cynical. I put up a story in the stack yesterday that some members of the Freedom Caucus are looking for an 8% reduction in federal spending. And as one of my commenters pointed out, well, when you have a $2.2 trillion annual deficit and your budget is $7 trillion, 8% of $7 trillion is $560 billion. So even doing something as dramatic as an 8% cut in spending would still leave the deficit at $1.6 trillion. So getting a little deeper, I'm sure you saw the headlines. I put up three headlines. I think it was on Wednesday. You know, I originally was drawn into politics because of the national debt years, yep, decades ago when it was crossing $1 trillion, $2 trillion. So that's always been an issue that I paid very close attention to. And as the debt ballooned past 15, the total national debt ballooned past $15 trillion, then 20, then 25, we weren't getting hit that hard, as you know, because interest rates were so low and they were financing the debt on short term, essentially 3 months to 1 year bills. So they were able to finance it at 1%, 2%, 3% for about 10 or 12 years. And I kept telling people, if you own gold, if you own silver, just wait, because we will revert to the mean. We will get back to 5% interest rates. And a 5% interest rate, and this was the point of my post earlier in the week, a 5% interest rate on a $33 trillion national debt is $1.65 trillion every single year just for your interest payment. That knocks nothing off the debt. All that does is keep you, essentially keep you even with paying your interest. And so to, you know, wind it back to your question, CFP Nation is cynical. They don't believe it. They don't believe that the cuts that are out there are even big enough. And so that's where we are.
So the expectation, though, I think that we are going to get hoodwinked here, though, Kane. I mean, I don't want to get our audience's hopes up too much. We have three very basic demands. And it's funny, there's no war room. There's no like group chat. I just love how the base kind of all synergizes itself, right? Secure the border, defund Jack Smith, defund Ukraine. But I don't know if we're going to get any of that, Kane. What do you think? I think
probably
we're going to get let down by Republicans.
We always do. That's part of the cynical nature. I mean, we go through these fights every 6 months or so, and we tend to get our hopes built up that someone will show some backbone, and we're always let down. You know, this idea of defunding Jack Smith, it's one of the best ideas that's out there in the Republican caucus. I don't know how you get that through the Senate. You know, this is complicated stuff, but I certainly don't have my hopes up, no.
So we're seeing some people start to hold the line and potentially a government shutdown looming. So Kane, it looks as if the weaponization of government is in full light. What we said last hour, they went after Menendez, in our opinion, because they wanted to try to send a message to the other 99 senators not to touch the FBI funding. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, right before I came on the air, I just had to check my halal meat freezer I had to make sure my gold bars.
He ran the bribery operation. Talk about this, Kane. This is unbelievable. He ran the bribery operation through a halal meat company.
I know. It's the headlines go on and on. I've got five headlines up on Menendez. 400,000 in gold bars, running it through a halal meat company, giving information to the Egyptian intelligence that he should not have been providing, involvement with New Jersey mob figures. I mean, it's the first thought, Charlie, and maybe you know, because I haven't had time to look at it. My first thought is the venue. Where is this trial going to be? Because I remember the last Menendez trial, which was in New Jersey, and it was not guilty on all counts, even though his co-conspirator in the previous bribery, I think it was an ophthalmologist from Miami, that doctor had been convicted and sentenced to prison. And he watches the first Menendez trial in New Jersey and let him get off scot-free. So that was one of my thoughts this morning. Is this going to be a D.C. trial or is this going to be another New Jersey trial? Have you seen anything on that?
No, I mean, it's a good question. But I think that there is this reminder, not so subtle reminder, that the administrative state wants those other 99 senators to know they're on watch and that the fourth branch of government runs the entire country. Look, the only difference between Bob Menendez and Joe Biden is just that Bob Menendez was sloppier. He didn't give the cokehead son all the, you know, the little bit of a distance and a little bit of the appearance of this. And I don't want to get people's hopes up too much, because then this ties to another thing that you and I have been hitting, Kane, I think more so than anybody else, is that this all has to do with Trump. The not so buried lead is they're trying to create the appearance of impartiality so that they can go for the political kill against Donald Trump.
Yeah, it was the first thing that I thought. I mean, they've been looking for these little, small, yes, sort of shiny things that they can hang up and say, look, we're impartial. We don't just go after Republicans. We just don't go after President Trump. We're going after Democrats, too. We've been posting stories. We knew that the DOJ was taking another look at Menendez. They raided his wife, there was a raid. His wife was involved. This was a few months ago. So, one of the things that you learn about how DOJ works is that they have a lot of investigations sort of percolating, and they seem to be able to pull them out exactly
that's
when
right.
they need them. And this sort of feels like that's one of those cases. I mean, I imagine they could have brought this same case probably, you know, several months ago, or they could have delayed it for several months. And no one would know, because DOJ operates in secrecy and we don't really know exactly what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. So they utilize, you know, issues like this, as well as the Hunter Biden, David Weiss, the sort of weak gun charges. They use those to sort of show people, look, we're completely impartial. And it doesn't work. You know, it's too late for that. Our side doesn't believe in it. All the polls show that Republicans have great, great distrust for the Department of Justice now. So it's definitely a blatant attempt. I think you're right that it's a subtle message to the other members that, hey, do not defund us because we'll come immediately after you.
Yes,
you know,
that's
you
right.
You could be facing indictments if you make too much noise about defunding DOJ and the FBI.
Yeah.
So
that's
none
right.
of it is. Yeah.
Well, and it's the not so subtle reminders. It's one thing for the House, but the Senate has to be in complete lockstep, right? And the Republican House is far more in touch with their voters. They have a long way to go. The Senate is on a different planet, Kane. The U.S. Senate is completely in a different, they're representing different interests for a different agenda and for a different motive. The administrative state, the fourth branch of government, wants a not so subtle reminder for those other 99 senators. Here's the show trial. And I think it all has to do with 9:30. And we just have to remember, the insiders run America. Hey, everybody. Mike Lindell has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. He didn't stop at the pillow. Mike Lindell has created the Giza Dream Bed Sheets. These sheets look and feel great, which means an even better night's sleep, which is crucial for your overall health. Mike found the world's best cotton called Giza. It's ultra soft and breathable, but extremely durable. Mike's Giza sheets come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Mike's latest incredible deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you'll receive 50% off the Giza Dream Sheets, marking prices down as low as $29.98, depending on the size. Go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk, including the MyPillow 2.0 mattress topper, MyPillow kitchen towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-875-0425 or go to MyPillow.com, use promo code Kirk, MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Citizen Kane continues. You've got to check out CitizenFreePress.com. On a daily basis, I meet people when I do these events. They say, Charlie, what happened to Drudge? I say, well, there's a new Drudge, CitizenFreePress.com. In the spirit of what Drudge used to be, how's web traffic, Citizen Kane?
It's picked up. You asked me that one of my previous times. It was sort of the slow period of July, August, when everyone's on vacation. We were down about 5-6% during July, August. And sort of as I thought, it would come back in September strong, and it has. We're back. In fact, last week, I think we had 2 days that were record days. So about 13 million page views is was the old record. I think we did 13.1 or 13.2, wow. And we're going to do about 380 million this month, and Drudge is going to do about 580.
Hey, so you're climbing. You know, wow.
Yep. We're getting close.
So I want to go through this. One of the most frustrating stories that I see happening, Citizen Kane, is how Governor Ron DeSantis, who I believe is America's greatest governor, is becoming less popular because he continues in this political yes. race, of which he will not be successful absent something that none of us see coming. When I mean none of us, it's got to be quite a black swan event. But the chances are that Ron DeSantis will finish second or third in Iowa or third and fourth in New Hampshire, which is a shame. It is a heavy shame, I got to be honest, Kane, because he is a great governor who has done great things in the fabulous and free state of Florida. But he's in fifth place in New Hampshire, according to Gateway Pundit. We are seeing Politico.com, where the front page of Politico.com, the day that Menendez gets indicted, the lead was, for quite some while, they just switched it out, waiting for DeSantis to drop out. This story bothers me because we need Ron DeSantis for the future of the Republican Party. We need strong governors. But he's trying to put a square peg through a round hole, Citizen Kane.
Yeah, and boy, didn't we see this coming. You and I talked about this. We're both fans of Governor DeSantis. We think he's been a fantastic governor who's and absolutely America first and Rhino. You know, I reject that, or excuse me, America first and MAGA. I reject that Governor DeSantis is a Rhino. But he made a mistake, and we sort of telegraphed mm-hmm. it. We knew this was coming.
Yes, we did.
His, you know, the path, the carpet was laid. The beautiful red carpet was laid for him for 2028. He needed to stand back and stand by, as Trump actually told the Proud Boys. You know, DeSantis did not, he should not have entered the race. The problem was donors got in his head. They got in his head too early, almost 10, 11 months ago, November, October of last year. And they were giving him money and telling him that Trump, you know, that we needed an alternative to Trump. And he believed that, and he accepted the money. And then I feel like he was locked in. There needed to be an off ramp button somewhere before he announced. You and I could have told him, this is what is going to happen to you. The Trump influencer army, it's too strong. DeSantis was polling even with Trump last November. Now he's 50 points behind, and it's damaged him. He's damaged goods. I think all the time about whether or not he's going to be able to sort of slip off into the sunset and you know, rescue himself for 2028, or if he's damaged that. But we knew, we sort of warned him that was his danger. You enter this race and you're going to put yourself at risk for your future. And now, you know, his governorship ends in 2026 and he may not have anything to do. So he's obviously not going to win. And when you talked about a black swan event, it would take the blackest swan of all. And then it's not even a fact that DeSantis would get the nomination, because as he's fallen, others have risen. Vivek has risen. And so, yeah, it's, I know he makes his decisions in-house. He and his wife make these decisions themselves. And I wish he had listened more to your show and had gotten the feeling that that it wouldn't be good for him.
Yeah. So let's build this out, right? So DeSantis could have been an incredible organizer and just really kind of untouchable of ballot chasing, early voting, all this. Final thoughts, Citizen Kane. Ron DeSantis has spent $150 million to now be in sixth place in New Hampshire.
Yeah, and you were on the $150 million part early. I remember 5 months ago you were like, let's take 10% of that, 15% of that, and don't spend it on ads. Don't spend it on promoting your campaign that's going to fail. Spend it on getting out to vote movement in the five or six swing states that really matter. So we've been on it. It's a shame. It's unbelievable that Griffin and these other billionaire donors have thought that this was a good idea. It's never going to work. They don't understand the Trump base. And I'll say one last shout out. I want people to go to Citizen Free Press, scan down to about the fifth link on the stack. There's a fantastic 5-minute segment of Charlie yesterday with Roseanne Barr doing name association on Hillary Clinton and Zelensky and plenty of others. I saw that. I thought it was fantastic.
Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. We are saving babies with preborn by providing free ultrasounds. When you introduce a girl to her baby by providing an ultrasound, you're giving her the truth at the most important time in her life. And more than 85% of the time when she sees the baby and hears the baby's heartbeat, she will choose life. The voices that call themselves pro-choice are loud and proud, and they are everywhere. It might feel like an uphill battle, but there is no better fight to fight than with the truth of an ultrasound. $140 gives 5 mothers a free ultrasound and saves babies. $280 can save 10 babies. For just $28 a month, you can save a baby a month for less than a dollar a day. And $15,000 gift will provide an ultrasound machine that will save lives for years to come. Whether you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, that opportunity is just a phone call or click away. I'm a donor to Preborn, and you should be too. Call 833-850-BABY. That is 833-850-2229. Or go to preborn.org/Kirk. If you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, the opportunity is just right there. Go to preborn.org/Kirk. Joining us now is Darren Beatty. Darren, you have a very important new piece, revolver.news. Merrick Garland's sloppy Ray Epps plea deal is worse than you think. Darren, tell us about it.
Well, as many of listeners might know by now, Ray Epps was indicted finally by the DOJ in what is maybe one of the most bungling and inept efforts to salvage the crumbling narrative surrounding Ray Epps and the Fedsurrection more generally. This is over 2.5 years after January 6th, and the feds perfunctorily weekly slap him with a singular misdemeanor charge for disorderly conduct. At this point, it's simply too little too late, and people see it for the desperate attempt that it is. And so we have two brand new pieces on revolver.news addressing this and analyzing it. The one at the very top that you mentioned sort of looks at the statement of offense. Basically, they gave Ray Epps a really sweet guilty plea deal, and he's agreeing to having done a certain number of things that amount to this misdemeanor charge. So we go through the statement of offense and its description of his behavior on the 5th and the 6th, and we compare it to what we have documented on video of him doing, and we show what an absolute sham this statement of offense, this plea deal actually is. And in this particular piece at revolver.news, there's some very rare, some very amusing, and all very damning footage of Ray Epps's involvement on the 5th and on the 6th.
So then how do you see this playing out? Is there any way where we can ever get the truth about Ray Epps's involvement? Because, I mean, again, the piece at revolver.news is that Merrick Garland shoots himself in the foot with sloppy Ray Epps plea deal. Earlier this week, DOJ charged the infamous Fedsurrection provocateur Ray Epps. Give us some examples, Darren, of other people that have experienced serious indictments for things that Ray Epps also did.
Well, in many cases, Ray Epps actually did more. But just to provide a bit of context, you know, people are saying, well, Ray Epps didn't go into the Capitol. That completely leaves out the fact that Enrique Tarrio, who's to date has gotten the most severe sentence of all January 6th defendants at 22 years, not only was he not in the Capitol on the 6th, he wasn't even in D.C. The reason he got this ridiculous 22-year charge is he was charged with and convicted of seditious conspiracy, all of the severe charges are conspiracy charges. And even though seditious conspiracy is the most serious, just about everyone remotely in Ray Epps's position would have got obstruction of an official proceeding. But the amazing thing is, I've looked at the documents related to Tarrio. It's a very flimsy case for conspiracy in his case. But in Ray Epps's case, Epps literally acknowledges that he was involved in a conspiracy insofar as he texted his nephew saying of his involvement in January 6th, I orchestrated it. I orchestrated it. So the feds are throwing nearly two decade sentences on people with flimsy evidence of conspiracy. And the one guy who admits that he orchestrated it, and there's ample supporting evidence on video, is the one person that the DOJ has bent over backward to protect, and that the media, for that matter, has aggressively defended singularly amongst all of the January 6th participants.
So I got to be honest, Darren, I've had a change of opinion. For years, I thought, hey, it's good to have these head of these agencies publicly be asked questions in 5-minute intervals. I've changed my opinion. Darren, I saw this Merrick Garland clown show the other day, and they just lie and they give non-answers, or they have a sudden case of, you know, forgetting, like amnesia. I don't remember anything. So, Darren, we got to change the way that we hold this fourth branch of government accountable. What is your reaction from that Merrick Garland hearing? I learned nothing. I thought it was largely a waste of time. Do you share that opinion?
Yes, I do. I think, you know, as most of these things are, they're mainly useful for generating public awareness, which is not nothing, but it doesn't deliver accountability. And I think a general state of affairs that we're in now is at a very high level of public awareness. I think people are more aware than ever at how sordid and dirty and dark the regime actually is. And yet, notwithstanding this heightened awareness, there is very little, if any, a vehicle to deliver accountability for the malfeasance that we've increasingly learned about and we're learning about more and more each day. And that's part of the tension and, if not paradox, certainly the frustration of our moment is we're learning more and more and we have less and less that we're actually able to do about it in terms of real accountability. And unfortunately, as we've spoken about many times, there's such a tremendous demand for easy answers to that question, but there is no easy answer to that question as to how to deliver the infrastructure of accountability that we really need to correct what's going on in our country.
So I want to play a piece of tape here. The idea that Merrick Garland doesn't know the answer to this question, he's a liar. Play cut 51.
Have you had personal contact with anyone at FBI headquarters about the Hunter Biden investigation?
I don't recollect the answer to that question, but the FBI works for the Justice Department. I'm sorry.
You don't recollect whether you've talked with anybody at FBI headquarters about an investigation of the president's son?
I don't believe that I did.
Darren, he's a liar. He's a liar. There is no way. Your thoughts?
Well, he's a liar, but he's also a lawyer. And he answered well that said. Question in a very, right. A very rehearsed and very sophisticated fashion from a legal point of view. Oh, I don't recollect. I don't know. And then, you know, basically saying it probably happened due to the relationship between, you know, the DOJ and the FBI, but it's certainly weaseling his way out of it. You know, he thinks he's untouchable and he may be right. And I think it's important to just remind ourselves of his history. You know, this is not his first rodeo. The system doesn't have that many people on which they can really rely who've been consistent players for the regime for decades, who know where the bodies are buried and are, you know, loyal janitors for the system. Merrick Garland is one of those people. You know, people forget he was a player as early as the 90s, and he actually ran the domestic extremism portfolio for Bill Clinton, where he was really spearheaded the attack on various militia movements that were emerging in the 90s. And, you know, much more controversially, he played a very, very disturbing role in covering up key aspects of the Oklahoma City bombing. So he's been around for a very long time. He knows the ropes. He knows what he's doing. These figures are just recycled over and over again.
You know, Darren, I got to interrupt. So if the IRS comes to you, okay, and you take a fraudulent deduction or a questionable, let's just say, deduction on a business, and if you say to the IRS, I don't remember or I don't know, you could go to jail. You could, if you told the IRS, oh, I don't remember the circumstances. So for a citizen to say something like that, they could go to prison. But the Attorney General of the United States just gets away with it.
Well, yes. I mean, that's the accountability issue. As to the precise legal question of whether, you know, he perjured himself in doing that or whether it can be, you know, proven or so forth. Again, he's a lawyer. So I think, you know, he has a rehearsed way of answering these types of questions to cover his base. But like you say, it's obvious. Of course, he's had these conversations. And either way, it's like if he hasn't, it's in some ways even more damning because it shows that he's asleep at the wheel and he's basically designated somebody to do his dirty work for him. So either way, it's unconscionable. And it just goes to show just how egregious these people are, just in a slightly different context, but in similar in spirit. It recently came out, there's a testimony that Stephen D'Antuono had before the Judiciary Committee and all sorts of things. He was the head of the Washington field office of the FBI, among other things, in charge of all the J6 investigations. He is one of the many people who reserves his mercy and his sympathy singularly for Ray Epps. He was asked about Ray Epps. He said, I feel awful for Ray Epps, awful for Ray Epps. And he was asked a follow-up question. Well, have you seen the video of Ray Epps's behavior on the 5th and the 6th? He said no. Now, I find that very hard to believe, but it's remarkable that the head of the FBI's J6 investigation, remember the FBI put Ray Epps as one of the first 20 people on his most wanted list due to how egregious his behavior was. There's a national conversation about the nature of Ray Epps's involvement that's very controversial. And here you have the head of the J6 investigation saying, I feel awful for Epps, and he hasn't even seen the video. Again, if he's lying, it's damning. But if he's not lying, it's even more damning because it shows how they're asleep at the wheel and they just designate underlings to do all the dirty work for them. Either way, it's totally damning to the functioning of our system.
Your thoughts on Bob Menendez. What's really going on here, Darren Beatty?
Well, it's certainly interesting to see a high-profile Democrat actually indicted for these particular types of charges. I mean, the behavior itself is relatively commonplace in our politics. That's how the swamp functions. But it's not lost on anyone looking at this, the parallels and similarities between what Menendez is charged with and what the Biden family has been up to for a very long time. And so there's one theory that would say this is sort of escalating the pressure on the Bidens by creating an actual precedent for indictment, sort of teeing things up for Biden. Although, you know, the inside baseball could be such that there's something going on completely in parallel. I think generally speaking, what we can be assured of is these types of indictments don't happen because, oh, they just found out about their, you know, these people are doing illegal things. This has been an open secret for a very, very long time. The fact that Menendez is being indicted now means that he's either expendable at this point, or he's counterproductive, or it's somehow useful to the regime for a larger purpose. For instance, maybe teeing up indictments for Biden or putting pressure, additional pressure on the Bidens to push them off of the table for 2024. Indictments like this are not what people think. It's like, oh, there's finally accountability. Has nothing to do with accountability. Accountability is the afterthought. Accountability in the regime is the collateral damage That's one way to put it. Accountability from the regime's perspective is the collateral damage of a strategic move that will strengthen the regime's position in its own thinking.
It is also a reminder to all other 99 senators that the administrative state runs the country, that the fourth branch of government is in charge. Darren, what should happen on 9/30 and what do you think is going to happen on 9/30?
Well, I think it's just a matter of wait and see. I'm not prepared to speculate that. We just have to wait and see. And keep in mind the context that I've been describing is that accountability is the collateral damage. Everything is about, you know, the strategic moves of the regime and how they're positioning themselves for 2024. It's actually an interesting strategic conundrum that they have with a number of moving parts. They've proven themselves to be very effective in the past. And so we just have to see whether the machine, which is still well oiled, is as efficient as it once was as recently as, you know, 4 years ago.
Darren Beatty, check out Revolver.News. Great job. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I want to summarize our time together today by just kind of recapping the week. Started at Northern Arizona University, and it's just amazing how the media lies and misrepresents. You know, I've been doing this for quite some time. For the last 3 years, do you know the problem that we've had at Turning Point USA? We have not been able to find rooms big enough to fit all the students that want to attend our campus stops, especially last semester. Ohio State packed hundreds of students we had to turn away. Even at UC Santa Barbara had to turn away students all across the country. And yet the media comes up and they all of a sudden say, oh my goodness. They say, Charlie Kirk gets heckled. He's not very good at this thing. These are dishonest people. And I'm sure the media will cover our upcoming campus tour. I'm sure they're going to cover all San Jose State, UCF, Albany, Buffalo, Georgia Tech. I'm sure that they're going to cover all the response we receive at Arizona State University. You guys know this, but when you really experience it on a daily basis, these are bad people. The media, they are co-conspirators in the downfall, the destruction of the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world. They don't care about truth. They care about power. They do not care about honesty. They care about revenge. These are bitter, broken, bad people that happen to have a keyboard. It makes them important because they think they can control you and crush you. Thankfully, we do not bend a knee at the golden calf of the New York Times. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.